I auditioned for Shark Tank. It was pandemic year, 2020. And not only that, I kept telling the producers I want to be on before Black Friday so I get the most sales. Well, they obliged, but it happened to be that the Friday before was Election Friday. And it was 4 days after the election. And if you remember, no one knew who the president was the Friday after the election. And so my episode gets pushed by 2 hours and I'm getting real nervous. I'm just like, there's no way that I could come this far, get on national television, the Super Bowl of business, and then I get screwed out of it. Like, there's just no way.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic-Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, consistency, and focus in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harshaw Jr., and today I bring you Akeem Shannon. Akeem is the CEO of an Inc. magazine top 50 fastest growing consumer brand. He has an incredible story. He had a full scholarship going to college, dropped out due to poor academic performance, ended up on Shark Tank, launched a Kickstarter campaign. The story you're about to hear takes all these turns, these unexpected turns that you would just not believe in. It is an incredible story. He shares a book that is really the crux of the mindset that carried him through the ups and downs of his journey. And he shares about his athletic experience as well. You're going to get a lot out of this practically and sort of tactically, but you're also going to really hear an amazing story from an amazing person. So here we go. This is my interview with Akeem Shannon. You have openly shared your story, your journey from college dropout to the CEO of a top consumer brand. Can you share that here with my audience?
Yeah, man. I mean, look, it's been a crazy journey. You know, for me, it started, as you mentioned, dropping out of school, right? I had a full scholarship. I was studying chemical engineering and I lose it. And I was devastated. I remember being up in school and I hadn't told my parents, hadn't told anyone. And I was actually like squatting in the dorm for an entire semester. And at the time, I didn't realize it, but man, I was going through just severe like anxiety and depression. I mean, I was in a really dark space. And, you know, when I finally told my parents and I came home, you know, I just made myself a promise that I needed to, by the time my friends graduate college, I have to be making at least as much as the average college graduate. And that set me off on a journey. You know, I went, worked at two Fortune 500 companies, became a top sales rep at both of those companies, saved up nearly $100,000 over the course of about 4 years, started making six figures at one of those organizations. I ended up working at Square, which was I always wanted to work for a tech company and got to work with them and Cash App, but I wasn't fulfilled. I had done sales. I was making more money than ever. I felt like I recovered from that failure, but I wasn't satisfied anymore. I wasn't enjoying life. And so I quit. And that led me on this crazy journey of starting Flipstick, from reading this book, The Alchemist, that changed my whole perspective on life, to, you know, starting Flipstick, writing my own patents and trademarks, and eventually applying to be on Shark Tank, not making it, and then going in a very roundabout way of rapping a pitch to Sean Diddy Combs, who introduced me to Snoop Dogg, and then Snoop Dogg got me on Shark Tank, and then we ended up getting in all these different retailers like Target and Best Buy and AT&T, and you know, eventually I made my way back up to Washington, D.C., where I once flunked out of school at Howard University. And that time I was back at the invitation of the commissioner of the Smithsonian Museum. And they were putting me in an exhibit on the history of cell phones for some reason. And man, it's just been an incredible journey of failure, success, and then failure again with lots of setbacks. But man, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's been truly a great pleasure to be on this trip.
I want to unpack this because this is a perfect conversation, not only for my prior podcast, Success Through Failure, but it's perfect for this as well, because we'll get into your athletic background and how that kind of may have influenced you and affected you as well. But so you fail out of school, and listen, I'm a guy, and you told me off the recording that you're, I mean, you sound like a really normal guy too. And about
normal guys, regular dude.
The sense that if I had to fail out of college, I'd have been like, okay, I'm not cut out for this. Success isn't for me. But you decided that I've got to make at least as much as the typical college graduate. Getting a college degree was supposed to make that easier, but you chose the hard route.
Yeah, I had to do it the hard way.
Yeah. What's going through your head that makes you think, okay, I'm not doing the thing that I'm supposed to do to be able to make the money that I'm supposed to be able to make, but I'm just going to do it anyway. Like, what was going through your mind? What drives you to think like that?
Honestly, I was embarrassed. You know, like I went to a school where I was like one of five black kids in the school. And, you know, I was a pretty smart kid. I had this full scholarship to go to college and everyone thought I was going to make it. I'm my parents' only kid, you know, and I just felt embarrassed and I felt ashamed and I didn't want anyone to know that I had failed. And so in my head, I was like, okay, well, look, I flunked out of school, but if I can at least be as successful or more successful by the time all my friends graduate, my peers, well, then I won't feel so bad because I just felt ashamed. I didn't feel good. And so that's really what drove me is I was like, I didn't know how I was going to get there, right? But I just knew I had to get there. And so that journey started in a cell phone store. I was working for Sprint, selling cell phones and cell phone accessories. And I just knew I had to do it. And at the time, man, like I had nothing. I owed my school $4,000 for squatting in the dorm. And then I didn't have a car. So I had to ride my bike to the bus station, take the bus an hour to get to the store every day. And it was just, it was the worst. I hated it. I'd never taken the public bus in my life. And so here I was, and I'm just like, man, I can't let anyone know about this failure. And so I was just determined to make up for it.
It's interesting. I have a business partner, Dr. Tom Perrin, who the listeners may have remembered the episode. I interviewed him, had him on about 6 months ago. But he's a performance psychologist. He's worked with a lot of professional athletes from NBA, NHL, women's and men's national World Cup national teams, and on and on. But he said, I asked him this question once. I said, are a lot of high performers, successful people, like we look at you, Akeem, you're obviously very successful at what you do. I said, are a lot of them driven by like this need to prove themselves to themselves or prove themselves to others or even like self-doubt? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And it's like basically like, hell yeah. Like that is what's behind a lot of high performers. And here you were, you fell out after, you know, obviously a stellar high school career. You get a full ride to Howard, you're studying chemical engineering, you fail out. Now you're embarrassed and it drives you to become successful in sales and what you do. And you're like, hey man, there's more. So you quit your job with what in mind?
You know, so for a while that was enough, right? It was like, okay, I need to recover from this failure. And I remember listening to Michael Jordan in his documentary and he kept talking like the funniest line. I used to love this. If somebody would say something to him to slight him. Oh yeah. You know, he's really not as good as they say. And he's like, and I took that personally. And, you know, for a while that I take that personally drove me. But then you reach a certain point in life, I think, where, you know, the universe or God or whatever you want to call it, like tells you, okay, it's time for the next chapter now. And so while I had been fueled, right, by being number one, hitting all these sales, making more money than I ever had, at a certain point, it didn't satisfy me anymore. I wasn't fulfilled doing the things that I had been doing. And so I quit. You know, I leave my job and I say, I got to go do something else. And I wanted to start a business the first time I quit. And this was at Verizon. I was coming off a call center. And I started doing something. I was doing some political stuff on the side, working for a local campaign. But I was afraid still. I was afraid to truly take the leap. I'd invested some money in this idea I had called Now Chef. Like Blue Apron was blowing up. And I was like, oh, I can do this and create like a cooking business.
You had invested in it or you started it yourself?
I started it myself and, you know, I probably invested my own money, probably about $5,000. I invested in my own savings, you know, into building a website and testing stuff and doing things. And at the first chance I got to give up on that dream, I basically took it. And that came in the form of another job, right? It was at Square. And I'd always wanted to work for a tech company, and Square helps tons of small businesses and, you know, it just felt like a good fit. And so I took that opportunity. And I'm glad I did because at the time I wasn't ready. Mentally, I did not have the fortitude and the confidence to take on the journey of entrepreneurship. And I probably would have given up too soon had I gone any further. But once I took that job at Square, I talked to all these entrepreneurs. And these were regular people. And they're like, yeah, you know, I was just making cupcakes in my house and my neighbor said it was good. And so I went and I just spent $3,000 on rent at the shop. And now I make $1 million a year. And I'm like, wait, what? What are you talking about? And I'm hearing these stories every day. All these entrepreneurs who start just all kinds of businesses. and how it got started, how their father started the business, and how they fell into it, and how it wasn't successful, and they made it. And I'm hearing all these stories, and I'm like, man, these guys are no different than me. In fact, they're calling me, asking me for my opinion on what marketing, how they should run their marketing, what they should use for this, what they should use for that. It honestly gave me the skills and most importantly, the confidence to say, like, if they could do it, I can do it. And so we got to this point where I just, once again, I wasn't happy in my career. And I went to my boss and I said, hey, you know, I just don't think I can stay. Like, you know, it's a great, great place to work, but I can't, I'm not happy here. And he was a good boss. And he was like, hey, you know, Akeem, I understand. He's like, but I don't want you to go out there and be a bum. I know you got some money saved up. You know, I don't want you backpacking through Asia or anything like that. And he gave me a book. And that book was The Alchemist. And, you know, I should have read the book, but I didn't read the book. He gave me this book. He's like, you need to read this book, and it's going to show you what you need to do next. And I was like, okay, whatever, Tom.
Great book, by the way. I recommend it for the listener.
So I don't read the book, and I do recommend it now, but at the time, I didn't read it. As it would happen, I start doing some marketing, and I'm doing marketing for other brands, and I'm feeling kind of the same way, right? Like I'm building someone else's dream, not building my own. And so I was finding I wasn't satisfied, but I've just quit this great job. I don't want to tell anybody, you know, I'm ready to quit this thing too. And my mom just randomly sends me a video. It was Oprah, and Oprah was interviewing Pharrell, right? And she's like, you know, Pharrell, you're a multi-Grammy award-winning producer, artist. Can you tell the audience what's one book that you just feel really changed your life? And Pharrell's like, Oprah, the book that changed my life, got me all these Grammys, is The Alchemist. And I'm like, oh, I have that book. I should really read the book. Get the book out, turn the first page. I'm like, ah, I'll read this book later. I set it aside. And so this stuff kept happening. I kept hearing about this book. People were talking about it. It ended up on the New York Times bestseller list again. I'm like, this book's 30 years old. Why are people still reading this book? And so as it would happen, I would be moving to a new apartment and chaos everywhere, boxes everywhere. And my boss would give me this beautiful copy of The Alchemist. It was hardback. It had leather, it had illustrations inside. And I put it on a shelf somewhere in some box. And I'm in my new apartment. I look at the counter and there's this paperback, tattered, $6.99 tore up book. And I walk over and I'm like, what's this book? And it's The Alchemist. And I freak out because now I've heard about this book multiple times. And then a totally different copy of the book shows up in my house. I asked my buddy who's helping me move. I'm like, dude, did you put this book here? What is this book? Have I always owned this book and just not knew I owned the book? And I sat down, I read it cover to cover. And as you know, and for those who don't know, the book is about a boy who goes on a journey to find his treasure. And early on in his journey, he learns about these omens or signs that will guide him, give him direction to find this treasure. And what I didn't know is that the books themselves were the omen for me. And they had to chase me down because I don't listen too well. And so, you know, I read this book and it puts me in this mindset where I'm like, man, my treasure is waiting for me. I gotta go search for it. I gotta go on the journey. And it was with that mindset that I get a late night phone call from my uncle, who's an engineer at NASA. He was telling me about a project he was working on, the space launch system, and how he's gonna use this adhesive that was based off the feet of geckos to do this project. And I had recently mounted my TV on the wall because I just moved. And I was like, man, if I had this adhesive, I could have saved myself a lot of time and energy mounting that TV. And so I just couldn't get this thought out of my head. And I have lots of long, drawn out conversations with my uncle. And I've never taken any action on any of them. But this idea it just stuck with me. I kept doing research. I'm looking at papers, I'm looking at universities, talking about this adhesive. And eventually I'm like, okay, a TV may not work, but a little tiny TV could work. And that's where the idea was Flipstick was born. A little device that allows you, I don't know if you can see this, allows you to mount your phone to virtually any flat surface.
Yeah, for the listener, if you're listening, you're not watching on YouTube, you got to check it out on YouTube because he's just stuck his phone to the window. It's a really cool product.
So, you know, and it's this adhesive, it's reusable, it's washable. Flipstick allows you to take, you know, hands-free pictures and videos, make TikToks. And this idea was just born out of thin air. And I was just so committed to it. You know, I didn't tell anyone.
But tons of people come across ideas. I mean, everybody listening has an idea. They've come across ideas. Was it the book? I mean, what was it about you that, Akeem, made you say, I'm going to pursue this? So answer that question. And then I want to get into like some of these things you did to pursue it that failed, setbacks, adversity, you're not good enough, this is not a product we want to invest in. First of all, why? I mean, you had an idea. So it's an idea. Everybody has ideas.
Yeah, look, everyone's had that moment, right, where you look on TV and then you see something, you're like, I had that idea years ago. And I'm a big believer that if you're having an idea, someone else is having it at the same time. And it's who's going to actually take action on it. And so I would say the book was huge for me because it put me in a mindset of possibility.
Mindset. That's key, man. Mindset. Not connections, not background wealth, not all the other things. Mindset.
I didn't know anybody and I didn't have any money to invest in it. I didn't know nothing. But I just had a mindset that said, it's possible I could turn this into something. And since I wasn't loving marketing, but I was good at it, I'm like, well, I'll market this product for myself. And if it goes well, maybe I'll get a really big contract with someone else. That's what initially I thought. I didn't tell anyone this was my idea. I was like, oh, it's a client. And so as we go through the process, I end up launching it. Like, I remember the first day I sat there after making all this stuff for Kickstarter, you know, pre-order campaign. I made videos and graphics and all this stuff, but I was enjoying it. It wasn't like when I was working for clients and I was like, oh, this is work. No, this was fun. And I remember the day it launched, we had made a two minute, 50 second video. And about 2 minutes and 50 seconds after it launched on Kickstarter, we got our first sale. I couldn't believe it. Strangers are buying something that I haven't even made yet. I just made a video about it. And man, we ended up doing $15,000 in pre-orders and it just lit a fire where I was like, I think I can actually do this. And at that point, I just made the decision. I said, I'm taking this as high and as far as it will go because I loved what I was doing. And I just believed in it. I believed it was part of my journey.
So a couple of directions I want to go with this. If you didn't make a sale 2 minutes and 50 seconds in, I'm getting inside the listener's head, right? Who they started their Kickstarter and they didn't get a sale in 2 minutes and 50 seconds in, right? It didn't catch fire like yours did. What if yours didn't catch fire? Do you still push through? Do you give up on it? And maybe it's a moot point to ask what if, because we can all look back and ask what ifs, but I'm just curious.
I remember before the Kickstarter launched, I had seen all these Kickstarter campaigns where people had made $1 million on their Kickstarter campaign. And I'm like, I'm going to become a millionaire from this Kickstarter, and then I'm going to be on Easy Street for the rest of life. We made $15,000, okay? It was nowhere near what I was hoping it would have been. But the $15,000 we got was enough for me to take the next step. And I think it's for so many people, they look at the end goal and it's so insurmountable and it's so impossible to get to that they give up. And for me, I just said, look, I'm just going to take the next step. If after I take the next step, it's not enough and I'm not feeling it, I won't take another. But what I found was every step that I took, I got closer. And that was enough because I'm seeing the progress start to happen. And sometimes when you look over a 30-day or 60-day period, you know, you don't see a lot of progress. And it feels like, man, this all this work and this effort is for nothing. But when you look back over a longer period of time, you look back a year, you look back 5 years, then you start seeing like, whoa, I've come a long way. I've made a lot of progress. And so I just started taking one step at a time. And look, right after we did the Kickstarter, we made 15 grand. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to keep making money on the website. No sales. I was getting like one sale a month. So that first sale in the two minutes and 50 seconds had to really drive me a long way because after that, it didn't seem like it was going to work out, but I was committed to it at that point. And the mindset, you know, when I read The Alchemist, there were so many times in his journey that he got stuck and it wasn't working and it didn't seem like he was moving forward. But yet he still always was. He was learning. And so I remember I was struggling, didn't know what to do next. We'd only made 15 grand. Then I made like maybe $1,000 after the Kickstarter.
Okay. So it was a lot of expenses. So you make a grand out of that? Is that what you're saying?
No, I had lost a lot of money. I had a lot of savings. I was going through my savings. Okay. But I remember I was like, okay, I'm going to try to sell them to some corporate clients. So I'm just inspired to go to this university. And at the university, I meet these twins. They happen to live in my building. And they're like, hey, let us help you. We won't even charge you anything. We end up going to some festivals and we sell some at festivals and it works. We made $100 the first day. Second day, made $150. And so then I'm like, okay, let's go to the mall. Then I freaked out. I was like, that's a terrible idea. But then I made the commitment to do it anyway. And they went with me to the mall. And after 8 months in business, We'd only made about $16,000, maybe $17,000. In those next 2 months at the mall, we made $30,000. And that was the next piece of validation I needed to be like, yo, I'm on to something. This is it. And that's actually being in the mall and making that money then. That's what inspired me to apply for Shark Tank the first time.
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now back to the show. So you keep taking steps forward. You're doing the Phil Knight thing, the equivalent of, you know, selling running shoes out of your trunk. You're pitching them at festivals, et cetera. And, you know, you're making some progress. Talk to us about your Shark Tank experience.
Yeah. So, you know, I applied to Shark Tank less than a year into the business. Get really far in the process. Out of 40,000 people, got to the final 200. And then I get rejected. And they say, you're not going to.
40,000 people.
40,000 people apply every year. Vet. And they get down. Only 120 people go to air every season. And I'd gotten to the final 200. So I made it a long way. I'm thinking, all my eggs are in one basket, right? Because my website sales aren't working. Not doing social media. So I get rejected and I was devastated. Like, honestly, at that point, I was like, I should have never read The Alchemist. Like, this has been a total waste of time.
Okay, pause there. You get told by these are experts. These are people who, I don't know who does the vetting, but they're people who go through this. Certainly they're looking for good stories, but they're also looking for good products that may get invested in. And they're saying, you know what? We're experts and you're not good enough. And then you have this thought. I had this thought whenever I was building this business on the side and I was working full time. I had this thought many times, like, man, if I just quit my side hustle, my life would be so much easier. You know, I'd get all that time back and let go of the dream. Like that fleeting thought went through your mind. It went through my mind. Then what did you do? Okay, you get cut. Down to 200. You get cut.
I was of the mindset that I was like, okay, well, maybe I wasn't supposed to do Shark Tank. Maybe this wasn't what I was supposed to do. And when I was out in Vegas auditioning for Shark Tank at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, I met a guy who then invited me to the Super Bowl. We go to the Super Bowl, we give away flipsticks at the celebrity football game. And then that led to meeting this guy, Salento, who had a viral song back in the day called Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Nay Nay. He invites us to the BET Awards. So we go out to LA and we get to the BET Awards. And all these things just start happening, right? Like, I don't know where it's all going, but things are starting to happen. And so out there, a long story short, my mom meets a guy. The guy says he knows Diddy. And he tells me that I should give him and his homeboy a piece of my company because they're best friends with Diddy and they can get me in there. Well, they felt like scammers and they probably were. One of them was an international drug dealer who had just gotten out of prison through some very mysterious ways. But they told me about this event that Diddy was having called the Revolt Summit. And then I see an ad for it. And I'm like, you know what? I think I need to go to that event. Now, this was a music conference for people who are interested in getting in the entertainment industry. And here I am trying to pitch a business. And they had a pitch competition. So I said, hey, I'm going to go. So I spent $500 on a ticket. And that was a lot of money for me then. And I plan to go down. And then I find out the competition is closed. I can't pitch. They already picked the finalists. So there was a music competition. And I'm like, well, you know, I took music appreciation in high school. I was in jazz lab band. I played the keyboard. I'll just write a rap. And I'll rap the pitch for my business. Now, arguably, that is a crazy plan, right, Jim? Like, you know, you couldn't write that as part of your dissertation and get anything less than an F. Like, it's just not going to work out for you. But that was my plan, and I believed in it. And I just knew, like I said, this is meant for me. Too many things have been happening. I've met too many people. I've never heard of this conference in my life, but now all of a sudden I keep hearing about it. These random drug dealers are telling me about this conference. I need to be there. So I go, I do my rap. I get in the top five to get on stage in front of Puff, DJ Khaled, Timbaland, all these guys. And I'm like, dude, I got this. They're going to hear my rap. They're going to love it. They're going to love the pitch. I'm going to get an investment. This is it. And then I get disqualified from the competition because they say, oh, Akeem, you're not a real rapper. You don't want a record deal. You're trying to get a business investment. I thought it was the same thing, but they disagreed. And at any other time in my life, I may have given up. Like, it was hard just to get there. I faced so much adversity. I almost didn't even get to audition because I had to submit a video at the last minute, all this stuff. And I get to this moment, I get disqualified. I'm like, why? Why me? But something inside of me, I was sitting at the comedy show, which was right before the music finale, the music competition finale. And something just told me to just stand up. So I stand up. Everyone's sitting. I'm standing up at the comedy show. It was DC Young Fly on stage. And I'm just, hold your hands up. And I hold my hands up. I got my flipstick in my hand. And the comedian's just looking at me. And you can tell he's pissed. Because why am I standing up in the middle of his show? And in very colorful language, I don't know if I can curse on the show. Or he's just like, you know, bro, what the f*** are you trying to tell me? What the f*** are you trying to sell me, man? And I go in full pitch mode. This is the flipstick. You can stick it here. You can make TikTok videos. You can do Instagram. You can watch Netflix. Stick it to the back of a plane seat. And he looks at me. And he must have felt sorry for me because he played along. And he was just like, I got one question for you, man. He's like, can the flipstick, can it stick to my girl's ass? Because if it will, I'll take 50 of them right now. And the crowd just starts laughing. And all of a sudden, his whole show gets derailed. Everyone's running up to the stage. I sell this. I do this. I have a hair care company. And it derails the whole show. And him and his boys are on stage. They're cracking jokes on all these people's businesses. And eventually, this kid comes up to do a freestyle. And I'm like, yo, wait, wait. I have a rap. I got a rap. And they're like, oh, not the flipstick guy. You already derailed our whole show. Now you want to come over here and embarrass yourself? And I said, yes, I do. And I got on stage. The crowd loved it. And the same woman who disqualified me hustles me to the backstage. She's like, you have to meet the CEO of all of our companies. You have to meet our sponsor. AT&T was the sponsor of the event. Let me introduce you to all the AT&T executives. And I'm backstage, and DJ Khaled is there, Puff's there, and all these people there. And I'm like, holy shit, what did I just do? And it was one of those moments where I'm just like, how did this happen? And man, that would set it off, because they would end up buying a ton of flipsticks, and they would invite me to come out to LA, and I'd meet Snoop Dogg in LA, and then Snoop Dogg would love the flipstick. And eventually, the guy who was the judge for the pitch competition I never pitched for, he was a casting director for Shark Tank. They called him up. They're like, you're not going to believe this crazy guy we got here. He got on a stage in the comedy show, and then he convinced Snoop Dogg he was a branded genius at our next event. Like, you got to get this guy on Shark Tank. And Shark Tank calls, and they're like, we want you on the show, but you got to do the same rap you did for Diddy for us.
Wow. So, Akeem, you get back onto Shark Tank and live happily ever after, right? You get on the show, it airs, you get a deal, and these are flying off the shelves, right?
Yeah, man. Look, that's what you think is going to happen. That's what I expected to happen. And that is not what happened. As luck would have it, I auditioned for Shark Tank. It was pandemic year, 2020. And not only that, I kept telling the producers I want to be on before Black Friday so I get the most sales. Well, they obliged. But it happened to be that the Friday before was Election Friday. And it was 4 days after the election. And if you remember, no one knew who the president was the Friday after the election. And so my episode gets pushed by 2 hours and I'm getting real nervous. I'm just like, there's no way that I could come this far, get on national television, the Super Bowl of business, and then I get screwed out of it. Like, there's just no way. And so it gets pushed by 2 hours. We're like, it's going to be okay. People are still going to watch. It's going to be all right. So it finally comes on, and the broadcaster tells us before the episode comes on, he's like, hey, you know, we've been doing election coverage. If there's any news, you know, we'll preempt Shark Tank to bring you the news. And I'm like, please, God, do not let them. I don't want to hear it. I don't care who the president is. I don't want to hear it. And so the episode comes on. It's going, everything's going fine. I'm the last person on the episode. I come on, I do my rap, right? And I got a whole watch party together. We're screaming at the TV. We're like, oh my God, everyone's so excited. And I get about 2 minutes into my pitch and interrupting this regularly scheduled programming to bring you a message from candidate Joe Biden. And when I tell you, my heart sunk into the ground. Everyone at the party was screaming. It was a nightmare. I have never been so crushed. That night, I was so crushed. I could not believe that this could happen to me. It felt so unfair. And man, I was crying. I have never been so devastated. I was crying that night. My phone was off because I just couldn't take it. You know, I told everybody, like everyone I've ever known was watching Shark Tank.
Yeah. You're going to be on national TV on Shark Tank and get a deal. And it's going to change everything. This is the hockey stick moment.
And I'm sitting there and I'm sobbing. I'm crying. And my now fiance comes up to me and is like, have you checked your phone? And I'm like, no, I can't look at my phone. I checked the phone. And in the lifetime of the business, at that point, we had made $120,000 total in the lifetime of the business. Look at my phone. And over the 48-hour period after Shark Tank, even though we didn't air, we made over $100,000. Doubled the lifetime sales of the business. And even though I was like, probably could have made $500 if it hadn't aired, I still had to take some joy in the fact that, dude, we still got tons of orders. And then on top of that, even though, like, when you go on Shark Tank, they make you sign a document that literally says, like, we will schedule you to air. We will have every intention to air it. But by some act of God, if it doesn't air, you can't sue us. It happens. And it happened before. It was like a terrorist attack. And it didn't come on. And they got sued. So now you got to sign that document. But even still, I decide to make a video. And I send it to the executive producer of the show and be like, dude, this was just, like, so unfair. It's just not fair. And for the first time ever in the history of Shark Tank, they decide to re-air an episode in the primetime slot. I couldn't believe it. And so on January 1st, at its regular scheduled viewing, they re-aired our episode. And that was a holiday. So even more people were watching. And so it was like we came on Shark Tank twice. It was just incredible. And man, so many things were happening from there. You know, we got a deal from Lori on the show. Then we ended up having to back out of the deal because it just didn't make sense for us. It kind of changed after the fact. And, you know, then I was still upset because I'm like, oh, I did all this stuff and I got a deal and now I don't have a deal. But man, we would go on and I remember, like, I want to be on QVC so bad. And then when we didn't close the deal with Lori, I'm like, I'm never going to be on QVC. And man, as luck would have it, one of my investors had a call with someone else. Then they're like, hey, we know this guy. And I would end up talking to QVC and they'd be like, we'd love it. Is Lori going to be okay with it? Then Lori was like, yeah, he could be on. And I would get on anyway. And all the things I wanted to do that I thought wouldn't happen, especially that night, you know, when Shark Tank wasn't going through, I hadn't closed the deal yet, getting into Target and Best Buy and all these retailers and international stuff, like, it all happened anyway. And it took longer, you know, and it was more difficult, but it all happened. And it just went to show me, like, man, anything's possible.
Yeah. Keep moving forward, man. What an incredible, incredible story, Akeem. Now you're in thousands of retail outlets and you have multiple products and just really, really cool. And for the listener, I'll have the link to the website Flipstick where you can check out the product. And it's a really cool product. I'm going to buy one because it's like really cool. I'm probably going to buy one for my
kids
too.
Don't worry, I'll send you some, Jim. Just send me your address.
Okay, cool. Right. That's one of the perks of being on the podcast. My daughters will love it for sure. You were an athlete, you know, and we look at athletics, we see these kinds of stories. These are these sort of, you know, documentaries get made on these stories, you know, of adversity, failure, setback, the Tom Brady who gets drafted 199th and he becomes the GOAT, you know, it wasn't even the starter most of his career at Michigan. And this is your story. You competed in a lot of sports. You weren't, you know, you admittedly weren't like an all-star athlete, but was there any impact? What was the carryover from any lessons you might have learned in sport? And to be honest, like, I know some people have bad experiences in sport. And they're like, okay, I had a terrible coach and terrible experience, and I'm not going to let that happen again. But I don't know. What was your experience in sport? And did it, and if so, how did it carry over into your business career?
You know, for me, when I look back on it, I realized that when I was competing, I never believed in myself. I was always focused on not failing, not finishing last. Never thought I could finish first. Just didn't want to finish last. Didn't want to embarrass myself, embarrass my family. Didn't want to look stupid. Like, I had such a negative mindset when it came to competing in general, and especially when it came to sports. You know, I had a father who was, you know, a D1 athlete, basketball player, you know, full scholarship, all that stuff. And I just felt like I could never be that. And no matter what, I'm going to be a letdown. And so I had such a negative mindset in anything I did. And I remember, like, one time I won, took first place in this golf tournament. But I would convince myself that I couldn't play golf. I convinced myself I couldn't play basketball. I convinced myself that I couldn't do any of these things. And I was just mediocre at everything. And man, I wish I could go back and talk to that kid and be like, dude, if you believe in any of these things, if you enjoy any of them, you can do it. but I didn't believe in that. And nobody ever spoke that to me. You know, no one ever taught me that as a coach. Like, you can do this. I always believe, like, the kids that are going to be good at this have raw talent, right? They were born with it. They're great at it. And that's just what it is. And I wasn't born with it. So I can't practice and get good at it and figure it out. That's not, no, you can't do that. Like, I'm not tall enough. I'm not fast enough. You know, I'm not fit enough. I don't have the ability. And going through this journey, I didn't know anything about business. Not only did I know anything about business, I had no money, I had no connections, I had no mentors, nothing. But I just figured it out. I didn't give up. And then all of a sudden, I find myself here. And I'm like, man, I could have done that back then, but I didn't know. And I, you know, I don't really live with any regrets. But when I do, I get the chance to speak to a lot of kids. And I always speak that into them, like, guys, whatever it is you want to do, you know, if you believe in yourself, you can go do it. But it starts with the mindset. And that's, I just had a terrible mindset. I did not have the heart of a champion as a kid.
This is why I have guys like you, people like you on the show. It's just, you know, we hear believe in yourself and mindset, and you add context. Your story adds context to these cliches that we hear. And it's just so inspiring, Akeem. Let's make this actionable for the listener. For the listener who's like, okay, this is great, I'm inspired. What can they take with them? Do you have any recommendations in, as far as habits or routines or things that you do that move you forward in your business career or your life otherwise too?
Well, I think number one is you have to protect your mind. Like, when my mindset is off, my business is off, my relationships are off, everything's off. And so I often will come and listen to a podcast like yours. I'll listen to motivational speakers. I'll read a book that inspires me. I'll read about someone's story, you know, that inspires me. And when I cope my brain with that information and not, you know, mess this on social media or crap this on the news, like, it shifts where I am both emotionally and spiritually so that I can see opportunities that may be right in front of me. So I think number one is protect your mind. Number two is take the first step. So many of us don't take the first step. You can't take a second step if you don't take the first one. And so I always just view things as just take the next step. Take the next first step. Because if you just take the next step, you can achieve that. It seems possible to you. It doesn't seem far-fetched for you. It's just one thing. You know, I don't try to overwhelm myself with the end result of where I'm trying to get, because the path is never going to look the way you think it's going to look. But if you just choose to take the next first step that you have, not only is it possible and easy for you to achieve, but when you see some momentum happening from it, all of a sudden it's like, man, I think I want to do this again. I think about when you're in the gym, right? Like, if you're constantly focused on, you know, I want to have a six pack abs, I want to lose 50 pounds, and I want to be there, you know, that's what my goal is. And then you're going day one to the gym, like, you're probably going to quit day two. But if you're just like, you know what, I just want to go to the gym for 5 minutes, you'll probably stay for 30 or an hour. And if you just do that every day, you'll look back a year later and you'll find, like, holy shit, I did what it was I wanted to do. And I just took one step, just every day, one step. So for me, that's been the big factor in my life that kind of changed everything. Because I always used to think I was lazy. And then once I kind of just realized, like, no, I'm not lazy. I'm overwhelmed with options. And so just pare it back down to one and just take that one. And then it becomes a lot easier.
Man, this is like taking the words right out of my mouth in terms of stuff that I talk to my clients about and the listeners have heard me talk about before in my solo episodes. So this is really incredible, Akeem. For people who want to find you, follow you, buy Flipstick, where can they track you down at?
Yeah, so you can follow me at Akeem Shannon. That's A-K-E-E-M Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N, on all social media channels. If you're interested in Flipsticks, you can get those at Get Flipstick. That's GetFlipstick, no C in stick, .com, and Get Flipstick on all social media channels. And then for those people who are like, man, I'm just looking for a little motivation. You know, I'm starting this journey of speaking. I got a new show coming out with the Corvette Museum, which is really exciting, where I drive people around in my Corvette, which is my dream car for years, and give them mentorship and stuff like that. So if you're interested in just some little bit of motivation, you know, you got a story you want to tell, or you just need a little pick-me-up, people can text me, and my number that they can reach me directly on is 314-789-9005.
Excellent. for the listener, as you know, we'll have all of that in the action plan. So grab your copy. Akeem, thanks for making time to share your story with us.
Man, thanks for having me on, Jim.